Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. It's been called the largest measles outbreak in the country since 1996, 187 cases in 17 states. Ground zero may be in Ohio, but the Kansas City area isn't immune to what's going on. Officials have reported 3 cases of the measles in Clay County. Most people don't worry about the measles or the mumps or even rubella, but the threat remains. You can't help but wonder, didn't the CDC declare in 2000 that the disease was officially eliminated? What's going on? Why are some parents hesitant to get vaccinations? And maybe more importantly, what's the threat? That's our show today. With us today to begin our show is Barbara Dawson. She's with the Clay County Health Center. And Barbara, nice to have you. Good morning.
Morning. Thanks for asking me.
Well, is the number of reported measles cases holding at 3 up in Clay County? Barbara, what's happening?
Yes, there haven't been any confirmed reports since last Friday.
And you're glad for that, I'm sure.
Pardon me? Oh, yes, we're very glad. Yeah, we're maintaining it through just the family.
Hey, how did your department find out about this case to begin with, Barbara?
Well, the affected child was admitted to Children's Mercy Hospital, and they are located in the jurisdiction of the Kansas City, Missouri Health Department. They and Children's Mercy notified them, and they in turn notified us because the case was in our jurisdiction, meaning it was located in Clay County, but not Kansas City, Missouri.
And when you first got the news that there was someone had contracted measles, what went through your mind?
Where exactly is it and how can we stop it?
And you want to stop it. Maybe it's obvious, but why, Barbara?
Because it's extremely contagious. You can contract the disease through a cough, a droplet, and the droplets can hang in the air for up to 2 hours. So that means that you could be coughing and then leave a room and somebody else could walk in and still be exposed. And approximately 90% of the unvaccinated population are very susceptible and could get this.
Those droplets hang in the air for 2 hours?
Yes.
That's amazing. I used to wonder how these things get passed along, and you just explained it pretty well there. 2 hours.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's residual. That's why when somebody goes to some place, like let's say a physician's office, they should always call first saying, my child or my, I have XYZ. Usually it's cough, coryza, which is runny eyes and runny nose, and let them know that you're coming in. And you don't necessarily have to have the rash at the beginning. Usually the rash appears after that first several days of prodrome, when you're beginning to exhibit the symptoms and then a fever. Hmm. And then the rash comes a day or two later.
We're visiting with Barbara Dawson, who's with the Clay County Health Center, about the measles outbreak up there. Now, the 3 folks who have this, they're all members of the same family. Do I have that right, Barbara?
Yes, you do. That's right.
Okay. And how is your department monitoring all of this? And have you responded to a case of measles in your midst? How do you respond to a case of measles in your midst? What do you do?
Well, as soon as we hear about it and get it confirmed, then our epidemiology and communicable disease program staff start an investigation. That means they contact the case or the parent of the case and determine where they have been, where they might have been exposed, what kind of travel have they had, things like that. Where have they been? Have they been to church? Have they been to school? Have they been to parties or any kind of congregate setting? And then from that, we figure out who else may have been exposed.
And when you get that information, you know, say someone's been to church, what do? Do you contact the church, or how do you proceed with that?
Well, we try to develop what's called a line list of all the people that the person may have been exposed, may have exposed. So we rely on their memory before we contact anybody else, because we don't and cannot give away private health information. So we cannot contact somebody and say, blah, 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 was at your church and we need to get everybody. So we try to do it backwards through contacting a list of people and saying, your name has been given to us as a contact to a case and we need to talk to you.
And what do you say to them when they come in? Say, I'm a member of a church and someone in the church has contracted measles. You contact me and you say what?
Well, did you say you're the person with it or without it?
I was just in the church on Sunday morning when someone
okay.
who had measles.
We just talked to you about how you might be at risk, how it spread, what is your vaccination history, Have you had two doses? Have you had one dose? Things like that.
I'm trying to remember the last time I was I had a vaccination for measles. You know, Barbara, it's probably been a while.
Right, and that people, adults with no documentation of vaccine, should go ahead and get two doses. Because it is becoming more of a problem, we've had, like you said earlier, 187 cases since the beginning of the year in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And there are areas abroad, overseas, where measles is prevalent, and most of the cases that we have had come into the U.S. have been imported.
Mm-hmm.
They've come from somewhere else.
Do you have any sense or even a guess, Barbara, of how many Clay County kids haven't been vaccinated?
Well, I was looking that up on the 2013-14 school year and also asked our epidemiology specialist. 97.2% of kindergartners this year, in this school year, were vaccinated with two doses of measles, mumps, rubella. So that leaves about, not quite 3% that were not. Of those, 0.1% had medical exemptions, and 1.8% had religious exemptions. For all of the school districts, we ranged about, well, we hit about 99.3% who were vaccinated with two doses. So we have a highly vaccinated population.
And most people in the metro, I assume, and maybe even across the state of Missouri, have similar percentages. Do I have that right?
I would say so, because these vaccinations are required for school entrance.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, in Missouri, you have to have two doses to enter kindergarten. If you go into preschool or child care setting, you have to have at least one dose.
Right.
Every child gets a dose between 12 and 15 months, and then they get another dose at age 4 to 6 years when they're preparing for entering kindergarten.
Just a couple final points, Barbara. That 3% we're talking about of kids in Clay County who have not been vaccinated for measles, that's roughly how many kids?
Let me see if I've got that.
I'm assuming it's not more than 20, 30.
20 or 30 kids?
Yeah, or am I wrong?
For the whole school district?
Yeah.
Well, it's going to take me a little bit to figure that out, because I just have a sheet that talks about how many are. I'm not going to be able to figure that out very quickly, give me a few.
Well, just give me a bottom line here, Barbara. How concerned are Clay County health officials about what's going on up there?
Well, we're very concerned because it is extremely contagious.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did early on in the process was get the susceptible members of the family vaccinated because they had no history of vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
So we started their vaccination, and we will continue that until they're completed. We visit with them every day. Our epidemiology staff is in daily contact with them to see how the cases are resolving and to see if anybody else is having any problems.
And do you do that contact via the telephone?
Basically, it's either telephone or daily home visits.
If it's so contagious, why would you visit in person?
Because our staff has been vaccinated.
Okay.
With the two doses.
All right. Well, Barbara Dawson.
Much less.
Yeah. Well, Barbara Dawson with the Clay County Health Center, you are so kind to take a few minutes. I sure appreciate it, Barbara.
Sure. Thank you,
you
for
bet.
Asking.
You bet. Bye-bye. Now let's bring in a panel of experts to talk about what this outbreak of infectious disease means here in the metro and what we can expect in the months ahead. With us is Dr. Stephen Lauer. He's vice chair of pediatrics at Kansas University Hospital. Dr. Lauer, so good to have you.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Dr. Natasha Burgert is back with us. She's a pediatric associate of Kansas City and a Shot Life champion, sharing the importance of vaccinations for kids worldwide through the UN Foundation. Dr. Burgert, thanks for taking time with us again.
Thank you, Steve.
And Regina Weir is Immunization and Childhood Injury Prevention Coordinator for Mother and Child Health Coalition in Kansas City. Regina, nice to have you too. Welcome.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, Dr. Lauer, what is the risk to the general public when someone is infected with, say, the measles virus in this case?
Well, the worry, again, is that it's a contagious disease.
Yeah.
Used to spread through basically everybody would get measles, and it can, in certain circumstances, be a life-threatening disease. We forget in this country, because of the success of the vaccines, of how much damage it can do.
I mean, most people have just sort of forgotten all about the measles, right? No one thinks about it anymore, and suddenly here we're talking about it.
Right. This is, the vaccine program is actually a victim of its own success. People, as you say, a whole generation has not seen this. disease at all, and so what it, the damage it can cause has been forgotten.
Dr. Berger, do you worry that given the number of cases across the country, we're at 187 in 17 states, might this number, you know, explode, I guess, to be blunt, or do you not expect that?
I think we're all worried about that, and this is already close to the previous record that was set in 2011 with 222 cases. So I think we're all extremely concerned, especially as the summer travel season approaches and people are heading to very exotic and not so exotic destinations that are carrying measles and could potentially bring that home to our communities.
Hmm. Regina, what do you think people should be thinking about? What should they be concerned about at this point?
Well, right off the bat, they should be concerned that they have their children fully immunized. And also, immunizations are not just for children. They're across the lifespan.
Mm-hmm. How old can you be and still receive immunizations and need an immunization?
There are quite a few immunizations that older adults need. Especially that includes flu and tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis. And one of the important things that we stress at the Coalition is protect yourself, but as importantly, protect those you love.
Mm-hmm. Now, who's keeping track of whether Steve Kraske has had my shots or not? I assume my doctor, Paul Diederich, he knows where I'm at, because I get one of those shots every once in a while, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Steve Kraske should be tracking that, but also your primary care physician. But also in the state of Missouri, we have, and most states have, a registry, an immunization registry. In Missouri, ours is called ShowMeVax. The problem with that is it's a very good system, but all immunization providers are not mandated to use it.
Hmm. I was going to say, as we're sitting here talking, you know, there are dozens and dozens and hundreds of our listeners who are thinking to themselves, well, where am I with this? If I had a booster, if I had a vaccination shot in the last 5-10 years, and a lot of folks don't know.
They don't know. And this is one of the reasons why the Mid-America Immunization Coalition and the Gateway Coalition in St. Louis worked with a state representative to sponsor a bill last legislative season to require all immunization providers from who provide vaccines for children all the way through to adults to be required to input this data.
And
it's very, very important.
Did that bill pass?
No, it did not.
Yeah.
We will work on it again next year.
All right. Well, Dr. Lauer, again, if someone is listening out there and isn't sure, can they go get another shot? Is there any risk of getting a second shot, even if it's been 3-4 years since they had the last one and they've forgotten all about it?
No, we think that overall the benefits of being vaccinated and making sure you're vaccinated fully far outweigh any risks of having an extra shot. So not uncommonly we'll see children in our practice where records have been lost, it's not clear, and we just go ahead and revaccinate as if it was starting from zero.
Yeah.
Got to ensure they're fully vaccinated. And again, the risks of an extra shot is minimal at best.
Okay. Let's get our listeners involved here on this very important health topic. Are your kids vaccinated? If not, tell us why. And did you adjust the schedule of vaccinations from what your kid's doctor may have recommended? And why did you do that if you did it? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, that's 816-235-2888. Dr. Berger, what are the measles exactly besides all those bumps, and why do measles make parents more than just a little bit nervous?
Measles is really tricky. It's a virus, so it cannot be cured with a particular medicine. The only thing that we can do is help you prevent getting it by getting the vaccine or to help you work through the complications of measles. Measles is particularly tricky because it starts out just looking like a cold, and for most intents and purposes, runny nose, fever, maybe a little bit of red eyes. And the rash develops later in the illness when the disease has likely been spread to family members and other contacts of the carrier.
You know, once someone contracts it, maybe I covered this with Barbara and I've lost the point, but once you contract it, how quickly does it become contagious, Dr. Berger?
You're going to be contagious when you are having a fever, when you're febrile. But what's tricky is that if you're exposed to someone who has had measles, you can get it as late as 21 days after that exposure. So there's a pretty wide window of potentially getting infected.
And that notion, Dr. Berger, you know, as Barbara was saying, that when someone coughs who has the measles and certain droplets hover in the air for as long as 2 hours, does that make sense to you? Do you buy that theory?
I totally buy that theory. I think she's spot on, and that's why this is so scary.
Wow, that's just amazing to me. Lots of phone calls here as we talk about the health concern of this outbreak of measles in the metro and across the country. 816-235-2888. Let's go to some calls here. And Sherry from Lawrence. Sherry, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi there. My question is, I am 52, and I had measles when I was 16. Not a real bad case or anything, but did get the fever, the rash, and all that. Wondered if I'm still protected, or is that something I need a booster or something like that?
Dr. Stephen Lauer with the KU Hospital, why don't you take that one?
Okay, well, my understanding as the general pediatrician, so I'm not going to see her, but is that the immunity from an infection should have you fully protected for life, is my understanding. Assuming you're an otherwise healthy person, our focus would be much more on finding people who have never had measles or haven't been vaccinated.
So if you've had the measles, you don't need any more shots?
Certainly within my practice. Yes, that's my understanding. Yeah, you should be protected. I had measles as a kid, so I know that I'm fine as an otherwise healthy person.
Dr. Berger, you fine with that information?
Yeah, I agree as far as the measles component, but don't forget that the MMR also includes mumps and rubella. And so even if a child has had mumps, has measles in my practice, which unfortunately we've had a few, we still do vaccinate it with the MMR to protect for the mumps and rubella.
Great point.
Yeah.
I will say that leaving the hospital with my first child, they had figured out I'd never had a rubella. So as they rolled me out of the hospital, they did get me rubella. But I don't know about mumps. Anyhow.
Okay, Sherry. Thank you for the phone call.
Thank you.
Dr. Berger, mumps and rubella, what are they? How are they different from the measles?
Mumps are going to be more swelling of the neck, still with fever, but most people come in with really swollen glands on both sides of their neck. I know we've seen a lot of that in Ohio recently. Rubella is a little bit more rare. I am not familiar of any recent cases that we've had in our area or nationwide. Rubella is something that we particularly watch for when women are pregnant, and so most OBs will screen pregnant women for that protection to make sure that they're protected during their pregnancy.
So Regina, if I catch the mumps, there's a different set of symptoms than if I have the measles?
Yes, I believe there is.
Yeah.
They're all viral illnesses. They present, again, you said, with kind of the fever, not feeling well, and then in the mumps case, the swelling of the neck gland to the parotid glands.
But do I get those bumps all over my body like I do with the measles?
No, it's a different rash. It's a different presentation in the end for mumps than for measles. So just a different viral infection that affects individuals differently.
Yeah. We're talking about mumps. We're talking about the measles. We want to know if you're a doctor, does your pediatric practice have a policy for vaccinations? Will you refuse to take families who won't vaccinate their kids, as some doctors won't? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Option number two is to send us an email to updateatkcur.org. Dr. Lauer, do you guys, if someone has not been vaccinated, and a kid is suspected of having measles, do you allow them to come into the office, or how do you handle that?
Well, if there's a sick child, we're going to see a sick child. And mm-hmm. So that becomes, you know, there's the acute issue of making sure that child is well or their symptoms are treated. So if a parent calls and says they're worried that their child has something, then we'll, of course, bring them in. We'll take a look. We do take some of those precautions, get them out of the waiting room, make sure they're isolated from other patients in case what they really have is a case of measles or chickenpox, some other vaccine preventable disease.
But even that, if they're leaving a trail of stuff hanging in the air, you're taking a risk if they're coming down to the office, right?
This is always one of the concerns in the practice about, you know, seeing patients who aren't going to vaccinate their children. There's the risk to that child, but there's also the risk to the other people in your office. As you mentioned, they're walking by. Just that casual contact or just close proximity puts other people, including some children with some immunodeficiencies, people are on certain kinds of medications, you put them at risk by having them in your office. Yeah.
Dr. Burgert, how do you and my buddy Dr. Pecoraro handle the same issue at Pediatric Associates?
We have very similar protocols to Dr. Lowers, and I agree with his stance that if there's a sick kid, we're obligated and we want to see them to make sure that they're cared for. We do have protocols in our office to keep those children out of the waiting room. We do ask that parents disclose, I'm concerned about measles, I'm concerned about chicken pox, I'm concerned about mumps when they're bringing their kids in so that we can activate these protocols.
Yeah.
But I also don't want to give your listeners the false impression that the doctor's office is the only place you can catch it. These kids can be as equally at the grocery store and the playground.
Regina Weir, how often do you come across doctors, pediatricians who say to a family, if for whatever reason the family decides they're not going to have a shot, immunizations for these different diseases, that they can't be part of that doctor's practice? How often do you come across that?
We have several members of the coalition, several pediatric groups who choose not to take new patients whose parents refuse to immunize.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think of that?
Well, I'm a little bit torn. I think it's a great statement to make, but at the same time, if a parent is on the fence regarding immunizations, I always look for the teachable moments, and it might be an opportunity for a pediatrician to parents are scared. They just want to know information. And for a pediatrician to be able to discuss those fears with the parents and maybe allay those fears so that the parent might choose to immunize.
You know, is there any reason, a good reason, at least from your standpoint, Regina, for a parent to say, no, I'm not going to have my child immunized for the measles and the mumps and rubella?
No.
Okay. Not a single one.
No. Unless, of course, the child is immunocompromised.
Right. Yes. Yeah, that Dr. Lauer, take that.
That would be the only reason.
The answer, there is no good reason.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the simple, straightforward reason or answer to put in front of parents, barring a very rare set of medical conditions, which we'd be checking for anyway.
And the reason I'm so emphatic about that is because we want parents to protect their children, but not only do we want them to protect while they're protecting their children, they're also protecting all the children in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called herd immunity.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps protect children and adults who are not capable or able to receive vaccinations. When 90 to 95% of our herd is protected, it's nearly impossible for a germ to get in and cause an epidemic.
Mm-hmm. You know, Dr. Burgert, you do hear there's some parents who say who question whether autism is a risk factor for getting one of these shots. And you say what to that? Let's deal with that right now.
Sure. I say that that there's really good news, and that is that is a scientific question. Do vaccines cause autism? And I can with great confidence with great confidence say that there is a mountain of evidence that concludes that vaccines do not cause autism. The challenge is that the fear of that association that started in the late 90s is very difficult to diminish because we don't have a cause for autism. And unfortunately, I think that until we really do know the true cause for autism, vaccines will sometimes take a hit. But I feel very comfortable and confident saying that they're not associated.
Dr. Lauer?
What we usually say is hundreds of studies in dozens of countries involving millions of children show there is no link between vaccines and autism, period.
Regina Weir?
We encourage parents to research, talk to their physicians, and look at good, sound medical evidence as opposed to listening to pop culture figures.
Should they be worried at all about any threat of contracting autism if they have their kids vaccinated?
No.
Okay. Our panel is unanimous in that front. Let's go to one more call before a break here. Let's go to Michael from Kansas City, Missouri. Michael, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Glad to have you.
Hopefully you haven't answered this question yet. I used to be one of the anti-vaccination people. we changed our mind. And my son's 8 years old, going on nine. And is it too late for him to get his schedule of vaccinations?
Dr. Wauer?
Nope. We can. There's a slightly different schedule and around some timing differences, but absolutely, we can get those vaccinations in anytime.
Michael, give me a sense of what brought you around. How did your thinking change? Where were you, and then where are you now?
Well, you know, like the previous doctor just said a couple minutes ago, I was just scared. My wife and I were scared. It was our first child. And, you know, we were scared about autism. We didn't want to do anything, you know, try to be very attentive parents. Didn't want to do anything that bring harm to our son. And then just, you know, like the other doctor said, the mountain of research, you know, I just read so much about it, and I kind of got the sense that the people that were going against it was more voodoo science, and was seemed to be just trying to scare people. It was more conspiracy theories than anything else.
And Michael, your son today is eight, and he still hasn't been vaccinated?
He has not, which is another quick question I have. I was in the United States Army, and I've been vaccinated for practically everything. And twice, and but I had the measles and the mumps and the chicken pox when I was a kid.
Sure.
My question is: does the human body sometimes, like I said, I had these illnesses? Does the human body, can it fend these things off? Are the vaccinations there to in case you don't? Or I guess that's my question.
Regina, take that one.
I believe they are. Dr. Lara, well, can't people go in and have their titers tested?
You can get there are ways to check and see if you've responded well to a vaccine or have some natural immunity. You can check for your antibody levels to that. But I think the answer is if you're not – again, these are highly contagious diseases. If you're not vaccinated or have not had them, you're at high risk of contracting that disease. So – important to either have a history of natural disease or be vaccinated.
And I would add to Michael's question also that vaccines are certainly a shield, but they're not a cure.
Correct.
So just because you are vaccinated doesn't mean it's not a 100% probability that you couldn't get the disease. That's
okay.
Why everyone getting the vaccine, just like Regina said with the herd immunity, is so important.
I got you.
And I think what Michael's saying is most parents, and this is what we see in our practice, those who do come in scared have looked things up, and just the people yelling at them that they're going to hurt their children, natural response for parents to be concerned. That's where we need to be having the good conversations with them and explaining why these views are wrong.
Yeah. Michael, thank you for the call. Natasha, before I leave this, I want to cover this point that Michael just raised. Is there any advantage for any reason for a parent to wait to have a son or daughter vaccinated until they're a little bit older and, you know, I'm no doctor, their body is at a stronger place to withstand any effects of a vaccination?
In my opinion, the answer is no. And the reason for that is because vaccines are developed to protect the most vulnerable in their most vulnerable state.
Mm-hmm.
And certain diseases are going to be primed to injure and hurt the extremes of life. So if you wait to vaccinate an infant, you're just prolonging the potential time that they could be exposed and get infected.
And Dr. Berger, no question that a newborn or, you know, even a one-year-old can withstand any impact that a vaccination shot has?
Absolutely. Our bodies are awesome, and we're exposed to trillions of bacteria every single day. The injection that you get from a vaccine is a drop in the bucket compared to what our immune system can do, and it can be absolutely life-saving.
So, Dr. Lauer, no advantage to waiting. You agree with that?
No, absolutely not. What Dr. Berger said is just right. Our bodies are built from the day we're born to fight off infections, and they don't always succeed. And what we're doing with vaccines is preventing some of those really life-threatening infections from occurring. Their bodies can handle the drop in the bucket is exactly the right term.
Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here about measles and mumps, and we'll talk about what happened in this country in 2000 when measles were declared to have been eliminated. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're still talking about the mumps and measles with our very good panel of experts, Dr. Stephen Lauer from KU Hospital, Dr. Natasha Burgert with Pediatric Associates of Kansas City, and Regina Ware, who's a immunization and childhood injury prevention coordinator for Mother and Child Health Coalition. That's in Kansas City, Missouri. I want to bring Crystal Brisky into our conversation. She's a mom from Independence. She has three kids with autism and has decided not to vaccinate her third child because her husband and her two children have had very bad reactions to the shots. She didn't make the decision based on fear her kids might get autism. Her first two children have been vaccinated. And Crystal, welcome to the show. Nice to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So what led to your decision not to vaccinate your third child, Crystal?
Well, none of my children are currently vaccinated. My older two, we had gone through the regular vaccine schedule. We had seen our doctor and it was all, everything was fine. And then they started getting, at about 2 months, my daughter started, when she got her vaccines, she started having very bad reactions, including rashing, very, very fussy, not wanting to eat, 103 degree temperature. And not
wow.
just for like a couple of days. Like I called the doctor and they said, oh, it'll last for a couple of days, but she'll be fine. This ended up lasting for months. And
wow.
we did all of the normal things to help keep the fever down. And the doctor said, okay, well, we'll keep going and see how it goes. And we kept doing them. And my son ended up with the same problems. And every time they would get the vaccines, we would deal with just these horrible reactions, just not sleeping and not eating, incredibly fussy, low-grade fevers for, months on end. And the doctors just kept saying, well, just keep their fever down, alternate Tylenol and Motrin, and, all the things that you hear from a doctor when your child has a fever
yeah.
with no real illness attached to it.
And, Crystal, you're saying that
my mother-in-law,
this lingered for months, Crystal?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah.
And my husband just so happened to have the same problem when he was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And so my mother-in-law approached me and said, my son had that. They had to take the vaccines and do each single vaccine over a six-month period in tiny, tiny weekly dosages for him to be able to handle it. And we approached our doctor and said, my husband has problems. They've been having problems. We're really, really concerned. He said, okay, let's try one more round, see if we see the same problems. And if that's the case, you may need to consider not vaccinating. And he gave me some pamphlets on, if, you have children that can't, how to protect them, keep them away from other kids with, illnesses, all of that fun stuff. Well, then we lived in Michigan at the time, and things kind of started going downhill with the auto industry, and I became pregnant with our third child. We moved to Missouri, and when my third child was born, we were just not willing to risk it because, we couldn't sleep. We were tired. We were exhausted. Our kids were miserable.
Wow.
My daughter was getting ready to be school-aged. And, as a parent, what do you do? So we started doing research online. We did research on the CDC website. We did research with other parents that have vaccinated. We've seen all of the people that, you hear about daily, Jenny McCarthy and, Dr. Wakefield. But I am not of that belief structure. We made the decision before my children became autistic. So we actually get a lot of people saying, oh, you just don't vaccinate because of the autism debate. And we'd say, no.
Yeah, right.
That had nothing to do with our decision because they were diagnosed after we decided not to vaccinate anymore.
Crystal, hang on just a second for me here. Dr. Lauer, I gather all this is a pretty unusual reaction to a vaccination.
Correct. This would be something really outside of the normal situation and gets that there are medical exemptions to this. They're rare. But again, something that's running in a family suggests some, without getting into it too much, suggests some kind of immune system issue that would certainly bear some further investigation. And in certain rare circumstances, may fall under that reason to not vaccinate based on a medical problem.
Hey, Dr. Burgert, did you come across kids who simply cannot handle a vaccination?
They are rare. when we do, and certainly haven't had anything as extreme as Crystal describes with her family. We are fortunate here in Kansas City to be able to lean into infectious disease experts when we do see kids who are having difficulties with vaccines, and we are not afraid to have them have additional testing to ensure that they are going to be safe for their kids.
Okay. Regina, what would you add to this, and any advice you might offer for, you know, for Crystal in terms of how to proceed here with her third child?
I would just recommend to Crystal that she continue conversations with her pediatrician.
Mm-hmm. That's the best way to handle this. And Crystal, are you doing that?
Yes. We actually had to leave our previous doctor, our pediatrician, when we first moved here to the Kansas City area, because they are one of those that you had spoke about earlier that they did refuse to see my children because they weren't fully vaccinated. They actually had a piece of paper on the wall in each one of their rooms stating that if you were not fully vaccinated 100%, they would not see your child.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to find a new pediatrician. Our pediatrician is very open about it. She does ask us every time, you know, so have you reconsidered, you know, and we do discuss it, but she understands that it is a very touchy situation when you have kiddos that have that reaction. So she's not very forceful with it. But we do talk about it often. We talk about, you know, like with my son, he goes to a special needs preschool because he's very low on the autism spectrum. And so when there is a case of like chicken pox or other things, he is sent home and he has to stay home until it's out of the school. And we are fine with that. And we abide by those rules. And so, you know, the school works with us and our doctor works with us, which is very nice.
Okay. Well, Crystal, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate you sharing your story with us. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Bye-bye. Dr. Lauer, you know, we've talked in here about some of the frustration that some doctors have about the reluctance of some parents to vaccinate their kids against a whole variety of deadly diseases. What do you attribute that reluctance to, and why are parents, you know, some parents worried about giving their kids shots? What do you come across in your practice?
Well, I think the number one thing, again, is that the vaccine program has been so effective in this country that talking to people about polio and measles is really just this artificial conversation because they've never seen it.
Yeah.
And you match that with the just the really over-the-top approach of some of the popular figures who've taken this on.
There's a Dr. Wakefield that you have particular concern about.
Oh, yeah. Well, much of the only paper ever published about the link of autism and measles came from Dr. Wakefield. That paper was subsequently denounced by his co-authors. Basically, he lied, fabricated data, and was paid by lawyers who are in the anti-vaccine movement to publish it. So he actually had his medical license removed in England and is now, I believe, at some place in Texas, I forget exactly where, still involved in the anti-vaccine movement.
That's just breathtaking.
Yeah, we agree.
It happens, though, right?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Okay, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking this morning about measles and mumps and vaccinations and how important they are in the wake of a small outbreak up in Clay County. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. We want to know how you're handling this situation in your house. Are your kids vaccinated? If not, tell us why. 816-235-2888. Let's go to Rick from Kansas City, Missouri. Rick, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. It's a very important show that you're offering everyone. I have three questions and a comment. I'm a polio pioneer. I was one of the very first in, I think it was 1952, and I can remember the abject fear that went through the communities with polio, and it's a shame to see the reverse in today's world. But my questions are, one, we hear all the time about the things that cross the placenta. So the first question is, how much of a mother's immunity is transferred to the newborn? The second question is...
Let me slow you down. Let's just take these one at a time, Rick. Dr. Berger, Dr. Berger, weigh in there.
Sure. So having a vaccinated mother is super important for pregnancy. We do know that immunity passes from the mother to child. The challenge is the challenge for the newborn, Rick, is that that's passive immunity. It's not something that the baby themselves has created, so it has a limited lifespan, somewhere between 4 to 6 months. That's why the vaccine schedule is so critical to continue that protection for the baby's lifetime once the protection from the mom starts to fade away.
Okay, Rick, go with your next one.
That was takes care of the second was because if it does pass through, then why not be vaccinating mothers? But she's explained that. The third question, though, really relates to the process. You all discussed this fear factor, and if educating parents is so critical, why do we not see more OBGYNs spending time with their patients, educating them on what they should be looking at, so that this doesn't. They're being proactive rather than reactive to this problem.
Natasha?
Helping mothers understand where they should be looking at and going towards so that you don't get to a six-month-old and not being vaccinated because there's a fear factor in place. It's already been dealt with.
Sure. No, I think that's a great point, Rick. And I know that personally we've talked to a lot of the OBGYNs who take care of our future patients in order to begin that education. We also have education opportunities when new expecting families come into our office to talk to us even before the baby's born. I think this is just a new trend, a new responsibility for OBGYNs that previously they didn't have so much motivation or such cause to do. But I do think that the trends are changing in a positive direction.
You know, thank you. Thank you again.
Rick, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Dr. Lau, we have an email here. What's the difference between measles and German measles?
Well, German measles is rubella. And so that's the disease that is very mild in moms when they get it, may not even know that they contract it, but is very damaging to the fetus.
Okay. Wendell asks us this. Can a panel discuss the genetic predisposition components of vaccination reactions? I also see there is now some research indicating a possible genetic and or prenatal predisposition for autism. Natasha, would you take that one?
We certainly do see some genetic predispositions for autism, in that I'm sure. As far as the genetic predisposition for vaccine-related complications, I don't have an expertise to fully direct, unless Dr. Lauer might be able to add to that.
No expertise, but everything's genetic to some degree, and we know that people who – I mean, there's different immune responses among individuals to the same infection, so some people get very sick, others don't get as sick. So how our immune system is reacting is an incredibly complex process we're just beginning to understand.
Regina, you know, some people may want to immunize their kids, but they can't afford the doctor visit or even the shots. And I know your job with Mother and Child Health Coalition is to raise awareness, but also to help these parents find programs that can help them. Can you tell us about some programs to help families access immunizations?
I would suggest that any family that has difficulties accessing health care regarding immunizations, that they contact their local health department.
Mm-hmm.
And the first Sunday of every month in the Kansas City Star, we have a listing of all of the metropolitan area health departments, their phone numbers, their hours, and parents just need to call and inquire about their particular situation.
Okay, Jeff from Lawrence. Jeff, you're on Up to Date. Good morning, Jeff.
Yeah, I know everybody says it's just random coincidence. I don't vaccinate because my son has autism, and he experienced massive behavioral change within days of the vaccination. And I just I don't think it's coincidence. I don't think tens of thousands of parents are just living in a coincidence, you know. And I don't believe all the studies. Most of the studies, if you dig deeper, have vested interest. Big Denmark study, the guy who did that, the one that my pediatrician told me when I doubted autism, that guy is in hiding, avoiding prosecution, the leader of that study. And it's been brought into question recently, the study that said then Denmark removed Pimerosal from the vaccine. So, and all your panel, they vaccinated thousands of children, and, you know, they have a vested interest. If it turned out that it was vaccine, they're standing behind the wrong thing.
Dr. Lauer, weigh in here.
Well, you're correct. We do have a vested interest in protecting children from terrible diseases, vaccine-preventable diseases. We'll just say, well, two things you addressed there. One, the thimerosal is a different issue about a preservative that's really, there are, with the exception of the some of the flu vaccine, there's no thimerosal in our vaccines anymore in this country. And the other one is to keep in mind, again, that measles is the deadly disease. 120,000 children in the world died of measles in 2012.
Jeff, thank you for the call. Susan from Kansas City North. Susan, you're on Up Today. Good morning.
Hi. Two things. Number one, I have a child that's on the autism spectrum, and she gets vaccinated. Number two, and addressing the issue of parents who don't vaccinate, I used to be nurse manager of the infectious disease unit at Children's Mercy Hospital, and I saw what happened to kids who didn't get vaccinated, and we would lose some of them. It was not unusual to lose kids to pertussis. We even had one kid with diphtheria that they got from a relative's well when they went to visit them out in the country. So these are real things that happen, and when people think it's not an issue, it is an issue.
Susan, I'm
and
glad you called. And that's a great comment, and that's a very good way to end our conversation here today about this very important topic. I want to thank Dr. Stephen Lauer from KU Hospital, Dr. Natasha Burgert with Pediatric Associates of Kansas City, and Regina Weir, who's with Mother and Child Health Coalition in Kansas City. Thank you all for a great conversation. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.